Welcome once again as MIT Professor Paul Samuelson discusses the current economic scene. This series is produced by Instructional Dynamics Incorporated. Well, Professor Samuelson, is it true that the recession is finally over?
Yes. I always warn lecture audiences that just because you hear a thing said in Washington doesn't mean it's automatically untrue. And I believe that history will record that the trough of the 1973-1975 business cycle is behind us. Let me, as an exercise, review with you some material that I had to prepare on short notice in connection with a Washington a meeting. The person who usually gives a matter-of-fact roundup of the current cyclical position was unable to attend this meeting, and since I was to be in attendance, I was asked whether I would pinch hit on short notice. I realized that this was not my specialty, but I was agreeable. It was a challenge. It was interesting to immobilize the data. So let me first avoid everything but implicit theorizing, and let's just take a factual look at the data that are available. Well, first, the consensus forecasters, Data Resources Incorporated, DRI of Otto Eckstein, Chase Econometrics, Dr. Michael Evans, the Wharton School model, Townsend, Greenspan, you know the group to whom I refer, they've been expecting the trough to come, as I have been putting it for some time, somewhere between April Fool's Day and my own May 15th birthday. And I've been counseling at Even Money, go with the experts. Well, it now appears that that was good advice. At Even Money, you win your bet. It rather now appears that a year or two from now, when Dr. Jeffrey Moore of the National Bureau of Economic Research goes into executive session with himself and his colleagues, that he will record that the recession did hit bottom, as I put it somewhat precisely, on Paul Revere's day, April 19th at 11:01 a.m. Moreover, the leading indicators, and we've now got a new series of them, purified of inflation and revised and amplified, so that we now have 12 pretty good early bird leaders. They gave their usual 1 month lead or 2 month lead at the lower turning point. In this case, it's nearer to 1 month lead. They went up in April slightly after persistently going down for a long, long time. They went up in March slightly, and they went up in April quite significantly. I believe it was a 4.5% jump in the leading indicators, which this series has been carried back to 1948 in parallel with the old series, which is one of the biggest jumps. When I talked to a banker a fortnight ago and asked whether we weren't very near the turn, he said, no, because leading indicators don't yet indicate that. Well, he's now had the news that they do indicate that. It is said that the leading indicators are just good on a no-go-go basis. They aren't quantitative, they're qualitative. And what they tell you is that the recovery is up. Moreover, if that is the case, if we have just passed the trough, then we are at what is typically the easiest time of the business cycle to be correct in making a qualitative forecast. You're safest at this juncture, just after the trough is behind you, in projecting a general rise in real GNP, in the income, real income, and employment for the first year following the turn. This qualitative precision is, however, deceptive, as I wish to explain. It's deceptive because the quantitative parallel prediction is by no means so easy and safe to make. And furthermore, we'll see in a moment that even in its own terms, it's a tautology which could be misleading. The pace of the recovery during the first year of the recovery is, alas, quite variable. There is quite a standard deviation of the past experience in the first four quarters after the bottom was reached. The big question, of course, that everybody's asking is whether this is a V-bottom. Sticking just to the historical facts and patterns and eschewing as much theorizing as we can, the only crude empirical rule which I recall reads something like the following. If the preceding downturn was sharp and short, and particularly if it involved a good deal of discernible inventory accumulation excess, then the odds are most favorable for a sharp and perhaps short recovery. You might formulate, so to speak, a revised second law of Isaac Newton. Only what came down hard can be expected to rebound hard. So superficially, this might suggest that mid-1975 to mid-1976 could be a period of vigorous growth, for the reason that we know now that the economy collapsed rather badly from the fall of 1974, from August and September, time of the summit meetings, to the spring of 1975. And we also know that there was considerable inventory movement involved in this period of time. So that way of looking at the problem does favor the probability of a V rather than a U or an L-shaped bottom. However, there's another way of looking at the late unlamented recession. If you date its beginning from November 1973, and that's perhaps what the National Bureau is going to do when it finally speaks out on this problem, or for that matter, you could date the beginning of the growth trend recession from Easter of 1973. If you do that, this recession was a long, drawn-out affair. It's been called a maxi-recession, the worst recession since the 1930s and in the age of Keynes. It's been called, aptly, a replay of the old concomitant worldwide recession. Well, from that viewpoint, Newton's law no longer leads to the confident bet that the recovery will be extreme and bouncy in its intensity. I think that that crude empirical law ought to be modified because I believe that the longer and more drawn out the previous recession has been, so that you are very far from your potential, it seems to me that that lays the basis for a rather sustained recovery, and for all I know, a rather rapid recovery in its initial stages. I remind you that the Newton's law that I've just stated would not have seemed to have been applicable to the 1933 trough. After all, it was a very long and drawn-out affair from 1929 to 1933. But in point of fact, the real economy grew from 1933 to 1937, when the recession of 1937-38 finally got underway, at a pace that was so rapid that most of us have forgotten about that period. And my recollection is that the rate of growth of the money supply, even in that period, was way, way above 4%, 5%, sort of long-run numbers that one is apt to think about. The rate of increase in real output for a very considerable and long period was considerable, but of course it was from such a low base that it was possible for that to be the case. There's another factor, though, that makes us hesitant in applying any simple Newton law. There's always the possibility that we are, in fact, in a W-bottom. There have been W-bottoms in history. The most famous, perhaps, was the 1932 bottom, followed by a recovery, punctuated, many think, by the apprehension and concern over the election of that man, Roosevelt, in the autumn of 1932, so that you again went into collapse, and most analysts record the lowest V of the W as having fallen in 1933, not in 1932. So if we're in a W bottom, then it's an illusion, this Paul Revere's Day trough, and so you don't even have the tautology of sure thing growth in the first year after a recovery. Well, I'm inclined not to bet with that, but it's always a possibility. If you want to be facetious and use the language of chartists, there's even the possibility of an inverted head and shoulder formation. The first trough came in the spring of 1974 after the OPEC boycott was over. The second perhaps came this spring. It's the not the left-hand shoulder, but the head. It's the lowest trough, the inverted formation. And the other shoulder will come sometime this autumn for you to name if you believe in that kind of absurd technical analysis. Well, it is absurd, but what is not absurd is an argument which you can get. I understand that the Commissioner of Labor Statistics, Julia Shishkin, may differ from some of his colleagues in the National Bureau of Economic Research in that he may not be willing to concede that November 1973 is the proper date for the onset of this recession, because he could treat that as an exogenous oil boycott phenomenon, and that the proper dating of the recession does not begin until August or September of 1974. Well, sticking to the taxonomy of the historical record, here are the facts on the growth of real GNP in the first year of recoveries for all the post-war cycles, post-World War II cycles. I happen to pick this up from the Argus Weekly Staff Report of June 2nd, 1975, but it's easy for you from any almanac to confirm these numbers. The 1949 recession ended, I think, around the autumn of 1949, and the first four quarters of that recovery, 49-50, there was an 8.1% rate of real growth. 1954, 1955, 8.3% real growth. 1958-59, that's the one that people often call the V-bottom, was a 7.1% recovery. From February 1961, the beginning of the Kennedy administration, when the economy hit its trough, for next four quarters, 1961-62 recovery, with healthy growth of 7.7%. If you just looked at those numbers, and you were sitting in the last part of 1970, you would say, gee, we're going to grow an average of 7.7, 7.1, 8.3, 8.1%. At least a 7.5% rate of real growth is going to come in the recovery 1970-1971. And some of the mechanical thinking, simply doing what I'm doing for you, I heard at academic consultants meetings in Washington, and then it contributed, it had only a small amount of the share of the guilt, in the famous or infamous 1065 billion estimate for 1971 by the Nixon administration. You recall Paul McCracken and Herbert Stein and George Shultz argued that against the consensus forecasters. Well, in point of fact, the recovery was only 2.2%. Let's not do any exclusions from the data. Take all the data, average the 2.2% in there, and according to my arithmetic, that gives us an average for all the post-war recoveries, 6.7%. And if you don't want to do anything more extreme than arithmetic averaging, then using this method, you ought to bet that in the four quarters, from the middle of 1975 to the middle of 1976, the economy will grow in the ballpark of 6.7%. I would warn against any such simple forecasting. If you can't do any better than forecast tomorrow's weather by crude searching out of average past climate conditions, you may have to resort to that method. But it's a method which can very soon reach diminishing returns. You ought really to go beyond the mere taxonomy of the problem and beyond the old farmer's almanac of all recoveries in the annals of the National Bureau. It's relevant, for example, that the 8.1% in the 1949-50 recovery, that amount of real growth, was certainly affected by the outbreak of the Korean War in June, about halfway in that first year of the recovery. It's a fact that the 1955 model year, beginning in the late autumn of 1954, was just a terrific model year. There was something about the car designs that just met a resonant response from the American public. You could sense it in the showrooms of the automobile agencies at the very beginning. I remember that Arthur Burns was much more optimistic about 1955 than his staff, and I asked one of his staff members, why is Arthur Burns so optimistic? And he says, Burns has reasons the reason we'll never know. Well, perhaps it was good luck that his estimate was bailed out by the terrific automobile year recovery. I would myself take that rebound of auto sales as an exogenous event, and I would flunk any student who, in a term paper to me, explained it by other than a dummy variable or something to do with style changes. I would apply the same analysis that I would apply to the lengths of women's skirts rather than any refined indifference curve analysis. It's relevant, surely, that the 1958 trough turned out to be something of a square root bottom, and the number is as vigorous as it is because there was a very serious steel strike in the last part of 1959, which was foreseen in advance. So I think you have to supplement the mere taxonomic data on historic cycles by an analysis of the existing factual evidence that has a bearing on the probabilities of strength or weakness in the various sectors of the economy. Well, let me give an example. Let's take the consensus forecasters. They average out in their estimates of real GNP growth in the 12 months ahead from the end of the second quarter 1975 to the end of the second quarter 1976. Not far below that crude 6.7% average. Now, typically, as I look at their forecasts, particularly the ones that they like best, their control forecasts, they base their guesses on the expectation of a rebound in domestic auto sales and production, and upon a modest rebound in housing starts. Well, what to think? Even the pessimistic variants of the consensus forecasters seem to me to put too little probability weight on the real possibility that domestic car sales may be very disappointing in the year to come. There's also, in my view, room for downside risk that the rebound in housing could be even less than that of the revised projections of the consensus forecasters. I was reading one of the better ones of them, and he said, when our clients in the housing industry look at our housing forecast, they laugh. So we're shading our housing forecast a little. Well, I don't think he shaded it enough, particularly since there are factors like the following. The real weakness in housing now is not in single dwellings. It's primarily in multiple dwellings, in apartment buildings, and condominiums, and so forth. If those were to come back strong, and some comeback in them is probably necessary to realize the rebound in housing that some of the consensus forecasters use, I think we'd have some signs of it. And I certainly think that experts in the housing industry who are nearer to that industry than I am would have some warning of it ahead. Well, what's the moral? The moral for me is not to replace the consensus growth estimate, which might be 6 to 7%, by my own more conservative guess or pessimistic guess or bearish guess of 4 to 5%. I don't even know whether that is my preferred interval. But rather, I would counsel very seriously a wider spread. I think that at least that four-quarter period should be characterized as involving a 4 to 8% range. Moreover, within that range, you're going to have some quarters which might very well be 10 and 12%. They're not uncommon in the post-war recoveries in the very early periods. So I think, in other words, you ought to second-guess the alleged degree of precision of even the best forecasters. And to induce you to do that all the more, I just invite you to scrutinize the different forecasts that you get, say for the fourth quarter of 1975, by any one of the consensus forecasters at short time intervals of 1 month, 2 months, and even 6 months. It's as if they learn an awful lot in 29 days, because sometimes you see some tremendous changes in so short a period. Well, there's a moral about the imprecision of this, of our ability to forecast. Some people derive the moral that for policy purposes, for example, monetary policy recommendations and policy recommendations for money over a period of as long as a year. I welcome the fact that Congress is getting on the tail of the Federal Reserve to report sooner what they decided 45 days ago and not 90 days ago at the Open Market Committee. It seems to me that there may be some good reason for very short run secrecy, but 45 days is a pretty long run, and I don't think anybody in the bond market's going to be able to make any money by the revelations that come out at that time. But I welcome more the change of the discussion to ranges of rate of growth in one monetary aggregate or another over a longer period of time, such as a year. Arthur Burns gave as his range the 5% to 7.5%, if I recall correctly, for the interval of 1 year ahead from the end of the first quarter, say March, to the end of the first quarter 1976. And given this imprecision of what even the most prudent and clever person can say about what's going to happen to real growth in the year ahead, some people, many of whom call themselves monetarists, draw the conclusion that you should name a single figure and stay to it. I draw almost the opposite conclusion. I think that it's a mistake to decide today what ought to be the average rate of growth of M1 in the fourth quarter, because in my judgment, it might turn out to be prudent for us to want it at that time to be plus 10% per year, or to be plus 1% per year. You say, only 1% at that early stage of the business cycle? And I say, yes, if there's a velocity effect which is causing the system to run forward at too rapid a rate, and if, when the open market committees are meeting in the fourth quarter of 1975, the best guesses about where the system will be 6 months from them and 9 months from them suggest that there will be beginning some congestion which might reactivate a wage spiral, might reactivate and reaccelerate the general price level in the direction of two-digit price inflation, then it could very well be that for a period of time, a 1% increase in the rate of growth annualized of M1 could be optimal. The difference between 1% and 10% for the fourth quarter of the year in money supply, to me, matches the difference of 4% to 8%, kind of a confidence interval of where the system is likely to have grown in the first year of the recovery. Now, mind you, we have been talking about the easiest period in all the business cycle, not only to make qualitative forecasts and, in a sense, to guess at the center of the quantitative forecast intervals, but it's also, by and large, the easiest period of time for policy recommendations. The only easier period of time for policy recommendations, as far as I know, is a period like last September or October or November, when the economy is deteriorating very badly, because then it seems to me that anybody except a zealot and hawk against all inflation should be in favor of more expansionary policy, reversible expansionary policy. The big question, I'll be discussing this on future occasions, is whether the recovery is likely to proceed too slowly or too quickly. And so I did an interesting thing. I took two of the consensus forecasters, who are not too far apart on their best guess as to what the real output is likely to be in the four quarters, but who are pretty far apart in what they think is going to happen to prices. The DRI computer is fairly optimistic about our being able to hold our own in the improvement in price inflation. The Chase Econometrics computer, I speak figuratively, is more pessimistic about that. Well, what I did, though, was to take their optimistic real growth forecast in each case, and in each case their pessimistic real growth forecast, and then see what difference it made in their price projections. And here they were very much alike. It turns out that at this stage of the cycle, and for some time at least, the behavior of the price level, whether good or bad, is not too sensitively to be affected by whether we grow, in fact, at 4.5% or whether we grow, in fact, at 7%. Speaking for myself, I think, given my value judgments and my scientific inferences, I would prefer in the first year of a recovery, one that has started from so low a level, I would prefer a 7% rate of real growth rather than a 4%.
If you have any comments or questions for Professor Samuelson, address them to Instructional Dynamics Incorporated, 450 East Ohio Street, Chicago, Illinois, 60611.